Welcome to OmniSites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. Join the founder and CEO of Multifunding, Ami Kassar, and his co-host, Lynn Ozer, the president of Multifunding, aka the SBA Queen, as they help you navigate, grow, and stay in control of your business.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our next edition of OmniSites. I'm excited to have my co-host here, Lynn Ozer, aka SB Queen. And couldn't be more excited to have my friend Michelle Galligan of EO Columbus and also the president and founder of Keep Financial. One of my biggest pet peeves is where businesses don't have their books in order. And it happens all the time. We're going to talk with Lynn and learn about Michelle's business, her background, what they do, how they help, how she did it, how she's going, where she's going, all that good stuff. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us what makes you tick. Tell us about your business.
Oh, yeah. So my business is truly a passion project. It's my second business as an entrepreneur. The first one, I helped large public companies. And while I know the work we did was great, it wasn't something that really, I was passionate about and was fulfilling in any way. And this business, one of the most satisfying things to me is when our clients say things to us like, you help me sleep better at night. I finally know what's going on in my business.
It's awesome.
Yes. And I love working with small businesses. I am a through and through serial entrepreneur. I love entrepreneurs, some of my favorite people to spend time with. And as we all know, they don't always have the best systems and processes in place. They're not always the most detail oriented. And nobody gets into business so that they can keep their own books. Like that's not a, nobody says, I want to be an entrepreneur so I can put together my own financials. Like never happens.
Not the driving factor.
Not the driving factor. And so, you know, we really exist to support entrepreneurs. And we also do some nonprofit organization work so to support those CEOs in taking that off of their plate so they can focus on what's most important in their business and also giving them insights that help them make better business decisions.
That's terrific. I have been working my entire career with entrepreneurs and many, many times we run into those who don't actually have their books and records put together, but oftentimes the ones that do, they don't know what they say. So how do you conquer that part? I mean, a lot of them pay someone to do their financials. And then when they need to present their situation to a bank and you ask them questions about the numbers, they get like a blank stare. So yeah. What do you do then?
Yeah. So we have part-time CFO services and a lot of what we do is work with banks in that situation. So, you know, putting together, like you said, putting together the financials is one thing. So you get this great set of financials. And one of the things I find is that non-financial entrepreneurs sometimes don't even open them in the email. Like they don't even look at them. So they certainly aren't analyzing them to figure out what they say. We provide CFO services. And part of that is doing a monthly review of the financials. So, and picking out, you know, the 5 to 10 most important things from the financials that helps an entrepreneur understand where they are, what's going on in the business, if they have any risk. But then also, you know, looking at things like expense reductions or, hey, you've got two services and only one's profitable. Like, why are we doing this other one? Or do we need to change something here? So it really is, you know, the kind of process I like to call translating the numbers into actual business information is a lot of what our CFOs do to help businesses. And you know, the bank process is sort of its own thing, right? Because you're in a process where you're trying to get lending or you know, trying to get a line of credit or maybe a larger facility if you want to buy a building or something like that. And you know, there are certain things in our business that happen that aren't necessarily even a routine part of our business. So one of the things that Ami and I've talked a lot about is, you know, when you're making investments in your business, how do you track those and how do you look at those? And when you're looking at lending, people don't understand a lot of times, like a bank wants to see how your business cash flows. They want to know your ability to repay debt. And so you've got to look at your financials and be able to point out to your banker, these things are not a normal part of our business, or this is an investment we made and this is how we think it's going to pay off. And that's another thing that we help with.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I find that when someone's coming to buy a hard asset, they usually are better at understanding what it's going to be. Like, we're going to buy our building and we're not going to have rent anymore, so we'll be able to use that money to pay for the building. Or we're going to buy this piece of equipment and we are eliminating a job, and that's where the funding's going to come to take care of that. But I do find that when it comes to understanding the cash flow, the timing of the money in and out of the business, and the need for a line of credit, they cannot understand the things that go into determining, or what the bank is actually looking at in order to figure out how much of a line you can afford and how much it is, how much you need. So I think that those ratios are something that entrepreneurs really don't spend enough time understanding.
And they also don't always understand how to use a line of credit. Okay. So, you know, one of the things we always preach is don't take on debt unless you know how you're going to repay it.
They
don't always understand that, you know, if you have a line of credit that's financing receivables, you probably don't want it to be more than about 80% of your receivables, because you always want to make room for bad debt. But also, like, if you're using a line of credit to keep your business afloat and make payroll, there are bigger changes you need to make to your business.
I couldn't agree with you more. I get upset when they don't understand it. And I also get upset with bankers who, it's real easy to get a line of credit, 1, 2, 3, and they get a line of credit and they really don't want a line of credit. They really want to buy something or invest in something. And even when you're expanding your business, when it seems like a line of credit might be the answer because we're hiring a bunch of people, they're not producing revenue for you on day one. So maybe that's not the best way to do that. And the difference between, you know, funding your cash cycle and funding an investment are two completely different things that I do find that entrepreneurs need help with. And I believe that your service is so needed. I don't even know if they know they need you, though. That's probably part of the problem.
Yeah.
until they get into trouble.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times we see businesses that are starting to grow a lot and they're still managing to their bank account balance. And so when we run across those companies, you know, it usually comes out early on in the conversation that they don't really have an idea of what's going on in their finances. And inevitably, we often see large service businesses that are operating from, you know, looking at their bank account, managing their business that way. But eventually they hit these huge cash flow problems, because all it takes is a couple of clients, you know, being late on their invoices or making an investment in the business that wasn't well planned. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, how can I make payroll now?
Michelle, tell us how you started this business, what got you to get it going, and tell us about those first few years and when and all that stuff.
Yeah. So in 2018, I was doing some work. I do some strategy consulting with businesses. So I do some turnaround work. I do some strategy work. And I was working with a company that was raising money. And they said, you know, do you guys, and this is when I had a business that helped public companies, they, do you guys do bookkeeping work? And I was like, no, you know, we don't do that. And then over the course of a couple of weeks, like three other people asked me if we did that. And I was like, all right, you know, like, what's the deal here? Like, what, you know? So I went to my business partner in my last business and said, like, all right, you run a CPA firm, help me understand why all these people are asking me for this. I would think there are a million bookkeeping companies out there. You know, bookkeeping as a profession has existed for like 200 years. Like, why are people having a hard time finding this? And she explained that the business model is such that it's either typically a CPA firm that has a bench of people and it really doesn't make any money. It's a loss leader to get tax services for the firm, or it's an independent and they start to grow and then maybe they try to hire somebody, but they're not really building a business, right? They've got a book of business, but they're not building functions and systems and processes in place. And so that typically starts to go awry at some point. And then we all know what staffing issues are like. Somebody leaves or goes on vacation or has a medical issue, and then all of a sudden clients aren't getting their financials. And so I was like, all right, there's got to be a way to do this. And I am not an accountant. I actually have an MIS degree and I'm more of a data person. And I was like, there's a way to do this and create some function, structure, and process in a way that should get people financials on time. And so I literally built an entire structure with like client onboarding and how we close the books on a monthly basis before we ever took on a client, came up with a marketing plan, and then I was like, all right, here we go, and pulled in some of the people from my old company and started just selling services. So we really started like end of 18, I think we had one client, and then in 19, we picked up probably 25 or 30 clients. And then towards the end of 19 is when we realized we were starting to get requests for some of that higher value add type work, like looking at projections or putting together a budget or trying to put together like a monthly dashboard. And that was when we launched CFO services. And so, you know, that's kind of where we're at today, is doing both of those. It's a national practice. We're completely remote. So I have employees and clients all over the country, and which is really great. It allows us to serve anybody, and am starting to look at some acquisitions as a way of growth, and then just doing kind of your traditional marketing.
So when COVID hit, you still were able to just march forward. Yeah. And that was not a challenge then?
No, it was incredible, because I very selfishly wanted to build a remote business so I could work from anywhere. And it then just worked, right? So we were really lucky that when COVID hit, we didn't have an office and everybody was already working remote. And so we didn't miss a beat, and our clients really needed us. I mean, you know, in 2020, 2021, we went from, you know, is my business going to survive? And like, do I have enough cash to get through these, you know, whatever this is going to look like, to then like PPP loans and then PPP loan forgiveness. And then, you know, kind of what's the path forward beyond that? And so we were, you know, in a good place to help clients with all of that.
It's great.
How did it grow, Michelle? How did you go? Did it grow first locally and then start to spread nationally? Or how did it go?
It did. So we started with a group of clients with the CPA firm that was my partner in the last business. And then really partially through the EO network and partially through referrals, we started picking up clients in different states. And we really didn't get, I would say, our marketing efforts very solid until like early, maybe mid 21 is when we really started doing, you know, search engine optimization and LinkedIn ads and stuff like that. And so the marketing engine then really took about a year to start to bear any fruit. And so now we have a combination of business comes from referral partners. So we have a lot of like bankers and lawyers and people like that that we network with. And then we have some strategic partnerships with regional CPA firms who don't want to provide these services. So we have revenue share agreements back and forth. And then this whole digital marketing approach.
That's great. How many people work for you?
15.
Terrific.
Yep. We just hired another one right now. And we have a couple more people in the pipeline. So we are really trying to be thoughtful about hiring with not knowing what's happening in the economy and making sure people are utilized fairly quickly. But the business model really works in the way we're, because we do flat monthly fees for everybody and longer term contracts, we have very predictable revenue. And so it makes it a lot easier to manage the staffing side of it.
So is there a client that's too small for you and a client that's too big for you?
So, you know, we have clients that are pre-revenue. We have a couple clients that are $50,000 to $100,000 a year. For those clients, we're mostly doing quarterly financials for them. Our sweet spot on accounting services is really probably the $1 to $10 million in revenue. And on CFO services is probably $3 to $20 million in revenue. We've had clients as big as 50. Typically, when they're getting to that point, they're trying to hire a full-time CFO to help manage the business. But yeah, what we see is that typically when a business gets to around $3 million in revenue is when you can't get your pulse of what's going on in the business by just looking at the bank account anymore.
Isn't that the truth?
How does a small business or an entrepreneur, other than having a crisis, which happens, but it's never good,
right?
How do they figure out they need you?
So a lot of people start out trying to either do their own books or having like a family or a friend or spouse do their books. And often it's when they get to the point that they realize they just don't, they're not getting good information, or they don't have what they need to get their taxes done on time. So they've kind of hit that point that they realize they need to outsource it, or they're just spending too much time on it themselves. And they're like, you know, the last thing I want to do is this. One of the really common things we see is in invoicing. So for companies that are invoicing clients, that a lot of times they get to the point that they're trying to run their business, and because accounting is the last thing they want to do, they're not even invoicing their revenue on a timely basis, which obviously affects their cash. So it's usually when they get to that point that they just realize they either don't have the skill set or a person with the skill set to do it, or it's just taking up too much time for them. And that's really on the accounting side. On the CFO side, it's really when business owners start to become more thoughtful about money and growth and opportunities and, you know, asking these questions about like, you know, is there anything I can do to optimize my profitability? Or is one of my products or services not profitable? Or am I paying too much for labor? Or am I paying too much for marketing, right? It's when they start to ask these questions and they don't have a way to get an answer, or they're trying to do like an acquisition or get new bank loans or something like that, and they just don't have the expertise to figure it out.
Do you recommend QuickBooks to your clients, or is there a different accounting software that you recommend?
So we, on the accounting side, we exclusively work with QuickBooks Online, and it really is the only game in town. You know, when I started, to give you an idea, when I started this practice, there were 2 million QuickBooks Online users, and there are 5 million now, and they really are the dominant software. There are a couple of other ones, but you know, we thought about putting a team together for one of one called Xero. That's one of the other ones out there that's more kind of in the startup space, and their reporting is really hard and it doesn't have as many integration opportunities. And so we decided we didn't even want to mess with putting together a team to work with it. And you know, when you outgrow QuickBooks, you're really moving to a much larger system at that point, because there's not much in the in-between space. So you have software like NetSuite, but then you're going to, you know, you have to have a team to implement it. You're going to pay a lot of money for it. And then it has to be managed very carefully. So you really have to have a team in-house to make sure that you're putting good information into it, or you're even moving to maybe something like a Workday or an SAP or something like that.
And at that point, you absolutely have in-house accounting department. Yep. So to speak. Right.
And okay. We often work with companies as they're growing. So we sometimes move from a fully outsourced accounting model where we're just doing everything for them.
Right.
To then we move to a co-source model where they're starting to build their team, but we might have just a controller in place to help make sure everything is running right and look at everything, and then eventually phase that out. And, you know, at any point in time, we could have a CFO who's helping with that. But, you know, we can help companies along the way go from full outsourcing to co-sourcing to being independent.
So what's next? I mean, you're doing great. When you look for 3 years, what do you visualize?
So we've got a couple of really exciting things we're working on. So we're looking at how we use AI in our space, which for us right now probably looks a little bit more like some of the new Copilot technology, using it to create some of the management reporting that we do, because there aren't great systems out there for that already on the market. So we're exploring some technology solutions around that right now. We are looking at acquisitions. So we just looked at one not long ago, looking to acquire both CFO books of business as well as accounting books of business. I think that there's probably an opportunity there in some of the independents who don't know what to do with their book of business when they retire. And so we would love to write a check for them to have a nice retirement and cover their book of business and make their clients happy for a long time. And then, you know, I suspect over time, the trend I'm noticing right now is we're getting pulled into more and more complex clients. And so like we've got one we just quoted that has 24 different entities and it's all over the place and really high revenue. And, you know, I can see how we'll be very helpful with them. But I think at some point we're probably going to end up developing a solution that's for even larger companies, because the reality of it is that the staffing world is not easy. If you're an entrepreneur and you want to bring in accounting people, you don't always even know how to hire them. You don't know how to manage them. You don't know how to train them. And so I think there's an opportunity to do kind of a managed services model similar to what exists in the IT industry, where you really can just take your entire accounting and finance kind of function and outsource it to somebody. So that's something that we have our eye on as a potential future opportunity.
So when did you make the leap from working in your business to working on your business? Because you are really looking forward and you had the answer when Ami asked that question, and not everybody does. Did that happen?
So I have been referring to this as the best accidental decision I ever made. To build a business that I can't help when something goes wrong. So because I'm not an accountant, if we have like a staffing shortage or a big project that's behind, I can't jump in and help it because I don't know how to do that work. And that has really allowed me to. So working in the business in the beginning really looked more like probably the sales function. So sales function and then kind of our internal finances was really what I did in the beginning. Now I have a salesperson, so I still do some high-level strategic partnerships, but I really do primarily focus on those complex clients. More of an account management kind of relationship, and then strategy. best accidental decision I ever made was to start a business that I can't do the work.
Brilliant.
Have you thought, Michelle, that maybe some clients are just too big and not in your sweet spot?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are definitely like, we have a couple of clients that we've popped in to do little projects for, but like for example, we've got, you know, a company that's $100 million here in Columbus that 3 years ago was $5 or $6 million. And so we did a couple little projects for them then. We wouldn't be, you know, in a place to jump in and do stuff now. And they have a whole accounting team, right? At $100 million, you have an accounting team. They're hiring a CFO. So they're really at the size that is beyond where our services would naturally fit.
You have a three-year plan. You have a five-year plan. The question is people that work for you, do they feel like this is a company where they too can grow?
Yeah. And we've actually had a number of people who have gotten promoted into different roles over time. People who have moved from accountants to accounting managers, people who have moved from accounting managers to controllers.
Right.
Last year, I hired my first COO. So she runs all of our service delivery. And we had a part-time recruiter who's now in an operations manager role. So there really has been a lot of opportunity for growth.
Do you have a lot of times where they get plucked off by your clients? Full time?
Because the clients don't typically, like part of why they work with us is because they don't need full-time resources yet. And again, they don't know how to hire, train, right, set up their own processes. We actually haven't had that experience at all.
I know that in accounting firms that happens all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if we were doing full-time, like on-site work for clients, that would definitely happen.
Right.
Because, you know, on the accounting side, we're more of an outsourced solution. And even on the CFO side, you know, we're providing a part-time service because companies are using us because they're not ready to hire.
Right.
So that helps protect us from that. Luckily.
That's good. That's good.
So tell us a little bit about your EO journey and how that's helped evolve over time.
Sure. So I joined EO 12 years ago, and I joined it because the member trip for our chapter that year was to learn how to scuba dive, which I had never done before. And I signed up for this trip. I didn't know anybody on the trip. I had not been to an event yet because right after I joined, my brother broke his back in a jet ski accident. And so I went to Florida for 6 weeks to help him out. Didn't meet anybody in the chapter until I went to the airport to leave for the member trip. And so I remember the first night we had dinner and I walked down the stairs to meet everybody. And I literally stopped dead in my tracks and thought to myself, oh my gosh, I found my tribe. This is the first time in my life I'm in a group of people where I feel like I actually fit and belong. And I think I knew in that moment I would probably be an EO member for life. And then in the next year, I got on the board and then also co-chaired a regional conference, was on the board for a couple of years, rolled off the board and just did forum and some events. And then 5 years ago, got back on the board again, served in two different roles. I'm currently the outgoing president of the board in the Columbus chapter, and then incoming area director. So I have five chapters. I'm basically supporting their boards and their presidents and helping them figure out how to move their chapters forward.
Wow, that's a lot. That sounds like a full-time job to me.
Well, you know, the last month or so it has been because we're in what we call strategy summit season. So our fiscal year starts July 1st. So I've spent the last couple of weeks traveling to different chapters to help them do their strategy summits and get ready for their upcoming year with their boards. But as you can imagine, if you think about what an EO chapter looks like, you know, you can have 30 members, you can have 100 members, you can have 200 members, but you have a board that is all volunteers and all entrepreneurs. And so getting everybody to row in the same direction is like herding cats.
Oh, I bet.
So it is fascinating, but it's also a really rewarding experience. You know, it's kind of the epitome of servant leadership. And I learn so much every time I'm interacting with other entrepreneurs in general, but also just in these chapters. And there's something about being around, when you spend time with entrepreneurs, it just puts you in a mindset of like creativity and growth and ideas. And so I was in at the EO Minnesota chapter last week, like we weren't talking about anything that was related to my business. And all of a sudden, like I solved this big problem we had about how we were structuring some of our services. And I was like, it's because I'm just in this mindset and in this flow with everybody. And so it's really a very rewarding experience.
It's awesome.
Awesome. What are your cities? Minnesota? What else?
Minnesota, Louisiana, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati.
Love it. If our listeners want to learn more about Keep Financial, where do they find you?
Keepfinancials.com. So KeepFinancials.com. And then we're also on LinkedIn and Instagram.
I know a couple of people that use Keep Financial for their businesses or their nonprofits, and it goes great. So Michelle, thank you so much for being a guest.
So nice to meet you, Michelle.
Nice to meet you too.
Thanks for joining us today on OmniSites. Since 2010, multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with a network of the nation's top lenders. Visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.